Grace and peace. We are back for another episode of Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. I am so ecstatic today because those of you that have been following this particular journey, you know that I released a new book called The Quiet Shift. I wanted to deal with the impact of aging parents in a traditional family. How does it affect, how does it impact legacy? This thing got me to thinking. This book is number 7 in my repertoire of writings, but I still get checks from book number 1. Where is my legacy leading me, and how do I ensure that my family does not lose out on the hard work that I have implemented in my lifetime? So, of course, these are questions that I might have, but I'm no esquire, I'm no attorney. And so I called on someone young, savvy, sophisticated, has an amazing mother by the name of Sabrina Williams, who is working into the world on her own as a young emerging attorney doing great things. And I figured she could help me in the next generation of the Generation Xers navigate through this simple yet, well, I don't know if it's as simple as I just said it was, this complex matter. And so, Sabrina, welcome to Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. I'm so happy you're here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
And so I really was pondering my own life. And I was thinking about, you know, how do I leave a legacy of, you know, my body of work, my history, you know, to the next generation without them squandering it or losing it or anything of that nature. And so I'm just curious, right? Does legacy ever come up in basic law practices, and how do we begin to preserve legacy? What does that look like?
I think it definitely comes up, especially in the context of, like you said, aging parents who want to leave behind, you know, wealth that they have amassed over the course of their careers to their children or to even their community if they don't have children. I always say to people, you have to write down what you want done with your finances and with your legacy, because, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where the state or, you know, your local municipality decides that for you.
Can we pause right there for a moment? Because I'm curious to note if it's a generational barrier. Why is it so difficult for us as parents, and our parents didn't want to share that level of information and write things down, or even just deal with the fact that all of us are going to die? You're in that area where you deal with people day in and day out. Do people not know that we're going to die?
I you hit the nail on the head. I think that the idea that we all are going to die is so hard for some people to wrap their heads around, especially when they have children, especially when they have young children. It might not be a situation where they don't want to tell you what they would want you to do with their finances when they pass. They just don't want to consider that there's going to be a time when they are no longer here and they have to sit down and orchestrate what is going to be done with their house, what is going to be done with their finances, their business, and things like that. I do think there's a hesitance there to consider what happens when they are no longer with us.
So what do you think are some of the ways that we can get on the same page, like parents to children, children to parents? You're young, you're doing well for yourself. You know, what levels of conversations could young people begin to initiate with their parents? And what have you found that feedback to be overall when they have taken the initiative to do something of such?
So I've actually done this. I've actually had this conversation with my parents. And I've said, you know, you're doing this for us, for me and my two brothers. You know, you wouldn't want us to be fighting over things you have. You wouldn't want us to be unclear on what you would want for to do. I mean, just the house. You wouldn't want us to not know how to keep up with the taxes, how to keep up with the mortgage. So I just couched it in a way that your love for us is what's driving you to make sure that even when you're not here, you've made decisions that we will be okay, you know, past that time.
So I'm going to say this. I know that your mom is a very rational person, so mm-hmm. she would get it. She would be open to it.
Yeah.
And so kudos to her. I had the same conversation with my children, although I initiated it with them, because parents, we are very proud of the work that our children are doing, and we don't want to be what impedes upon their ability to thrive, especially at their younger years. But even as you had gone into law and I've gone through the journey, you know, as a, you know, one that eagle eyes over what it is that you have gone through, I realized that you have a level of influence to be able to communicate with other individuals. And if Sabrina had the ability to what you do, to have this conversation with your peers, what would you tell them, and how does it protect you and your, you know, your peers or people that are of your age group? What would you tell them? How would you tell them to approach their parents?
I think that the easiest way to approach it is definitely out of love and saying to your, you know, saying to your parents, look, I know you care for me and you love me. This is something that you are doing for me, you know, at the end of the day. And you wouldn't want me to be grieving you and confused as to what you would have me to do with what you have amassed over the course of your life.
I'm going to throw you a curveball, because now that we're having a conversation, here's my thought process in it. We as young people, I'm going to put myself in your demographic for a moment. Don't you need a will, healthcare proxy, power of attorney as well? And I think sometimes people think, oh, my parents, the older generation. So let's put the spotlight on the attorney, Sabrina. Mm-hmm. Right? At what age should someone consider it for themselves if they really want to be a responsible individual and create legacy? And how beneficial is it to start sooner than later?
I definitely think starting sooner rather than later is ideal. Even me, for myself, I already have certain things that I want going into a trust, and I have certain things that I want going to a specific person, and I don't have any children right now. So, and I already have beneficiaries named in my life insurance policies. I already have beneficiaries named for my 401k. So I already had, you know, things that you don't need a will to disperse to someone else. I think we should all be on top of just getting that in order, notwithstanding having a irrevocable trust or will.
Can we unpack that a little bit? Because this conversation about trust have come up quite often recently in my own, you know, in my own circle of individuals. If you don't mind, when should someone consider, right, a trust as a viable option? Because trust, you know, gives you greater level of flexibility. It does take away, you know, the need for some levels of nuances when you go through the probate process. I don't want to go too much deeper mm-hmm. than that. But at what point should people begin to say, hey, maybe a trust is the most ideal vehicle for me to preserve and protect what it is that I'm looking to accumulate and acquire over my lifetime?
I think as soon as you are in possession of the asset. I think houses, for instance, should go into an irrevocable trust just because the tax implications. But that's just, you know, a personal opinion that I have. But I think that as soon as you acquire the asset is when you should be talking about what to do with how to dispossess it in the event that you're no longer here. I mean, just because you're old doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, people die every day for a multitude of reasons. So it's not something that you can say to yourself, oh, I'll, you know, deal with that when I'm 50, 60 or 70 years old. I think as soon as you acquire the asset, you need to be thinking about what you want done with it in the event that you're no longer here.
I think that that's a beautiful and a very interesting perspective on the thing. And I will share a little bit with you guys. If you guys didn't know out there, and I've said it on numerous occasions, I am a World Trade Center survivor, and I was on the 73rd floor of 2 World Trade Center. And I was 30 years young at the time, a mother of 2 young kids. I had the house and you know, all of those things. And so blessed be unto God that I'm here today. But that was a legitimate day that I could not have come home, you know. And so, you know, those things really change the mindset of an individual. So I've talked about how to plan for the unknown and the inevitable that is in your life. The unknown being my level of heavy emphasis, no matter how old you are. But you, I think, made a poignant point that I really want to just kind of bring out a bit more and make people know that this is a perfect opportunity to begin serious discussions. You've acquired an asset. And so we're talking about daring to dream and leave a legacy. You've acquired an asset. You've taken the initiative. You bought a house. You established a business that may, you know, yield a profit. You know, your children are assets, as I believe, you know, they liabilities in the beginning. But a good investment will give you a return on your children. But you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, you know, after a while, there comes a moment where what you have acquired deserves consideration of protection.
Yes.
You know, I think that's an excellent, you know, trigger, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? In order for people to understand, hey, I've acquired something of substance now. Yes. I probably should think it all the way through. Thank you. See, I knew there was a reason why, and we would get to the bottom and these generations would come together mm-hmm. and be able to talk about it. The other thing that, you know, I really wanted to delve into is, and I think, honestly, I'm going to take that point and incorporate that into my conversation. This is a good trigger moment because I think that is probably as simple and as basic, when we don't know things, we don't do things. And this is a cultural barrier and challenge sometimes. And then when we are intimidated by things, how do we begin to change the necessity to do this level of planning? If we really want to leave, and you know, this is Christian-based, a legacy for our children's children, right? So I can talk about the insurance all day. I can talk about the, you know, the acquisition of a house all day. I can talk about the numbers and the nuances of things. But I have, and what made me write The Quiet Shift in the first place, I have watched families come together and our great grandparents purchase a house, and the children, the next generation, which might be the baby boomers or the generation before them, lose it because they didn't have that level of proper planning. Now, I don't want to say that they didn't love us and that they didn't care about us and all that good stuff, but love will prompt you to act differently. How do we begin to normalize that conversation?
Just around our grandmothers leaving properties.
Just overall, you starting today and making sure that those that are around you understand the importance, the priority of making sure these documents are in place, because you're not working to the bone for no reason at all or to lose it.
Yeah, I think that's a good question, because just for me, I have approached this with my family in the most direct way possible. I've had this conversation with my grandma. I've had this conversation with my dad. You know, my dad lives all the way in Ohio. I'm here in New Jersey. I have a brother in Pennsylvania, and I've asked him, you know, is it clear in your will? Is your will clear enough to where, you know, we can work it out in a way where we're in three different states and everything will be seamless? I think that being brutally honest in this regard, because it's just so important, is just the best way to go. And I know that it's a hard thing to bring up. I mean, my grandmother is 76, and I know it's a hard thing to talk about, you know, these pillars in your family no longer being there. But you just want to make sure that they know that it's out of love, and it's something that they are going to be doing to make sure that the hard work that they put into amassing, you know, whatever assets that they have amassed over their lifetime isn't squandered. You know, like I don't want to see my grandmother's house, you know, get lost in a tax foreclosure or something like that. So I think the best way to just normalize this conversation is talking about the real effects of what's going to happen if you don't have a proper document in place. We may lose it all.
And that's the part that really concerns me in our culture and in our communities, where our parents and our grandparents and have done this one thing. They may have a house, they may have a small pension and a little 401k or retirement assets. And because they have not done the proper or appropriate planning for it, they find themselves ultimately minimizing or losing out on all of the investments. Now, I have a twofold area of grievance. I have, what happens if you get sick and you live? That's a whole grievance in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And then, if you get sick and you die, or you just die of old age, and you leave your affairs in a mess, because there's a level of fear there. And I do want to approach this, because you and I are professionals in this industry, so we understand the importance of being firm and being direct and being honest. But there is a level of fear that is also underlying our families. And it's not a community thing. It's just generally speaking, where one would be taken advantage of as parents age, or as one gets older, there's a fear of not being protected. And so we know that senior fraud is at an all-time high. We know, that there is a ways that people have used malicious malice and have forgery and things of that nature. People have given away power of attorney, and people have robbed them blind. And so we've got to speak to that aspect in some regard to erase or minimize that fear to a level where you understand that that fear cannot grip and override your need for proper planning. What would you say in that regard? Because we're the professionals, we carry weight, we have influence, with individuals that we sit with, but it can only go but so far, when we come in as professionals. What would Sabrina say to someone that says, no, I heard that guy down the block, or I was at the senior center and so-and-so's nephew just robbed them blind out of their checking account. These are real stories. Mm-hmm. What does Sabrina say to them?
So I think that what we were talking about earlier about having a lot of things not passed through probate is one of the things that you can do to safeguard against just senior abuse, financial and economic abuse. I think that having a second name on a checking account, an added layer of security for bank withdrawals and things like that, is definitely crucial if you have aging grandparents. Things like 401ks, retirement accounts, IRAs, and things like that. All of those accounts do not have to go through probate. There can be a name on that account where if something were to happen to the account holder, it will go straight to, the named designated beneficiary. And you're going to need a lot more than a power of attorney to change that, because that all has to go through the actual company that holds the account. So I think having a conversation about what can be dealt with outside of a will is probably beneficial in that regard.
Okay. So here's the question. Let's give them something that they can take with them and make it realistic. What should people write down if they're listening to us now at whatever mm-hmm. age that they're at, and they say, let me go ahead and get myself together. I've just been messed up. I want to get this right. I love my family enough to have this conversation. And let me just tell you, Sabrina, I've had this conversation with my children. I've written everything down. They know where all of my passwords and everything
is. Yes.
And what I have done is I threatened them with ghostly harm. I will haunt you for the rest of your life if you should do something outside of the scope. Your mother has, So I'm telling you, just on a personal level, I have that level of influence to be able to do that. But if someone were listening to this broadcast even now, and they said, I really want to get these things in order. Let me begin to write certain wishes and things down, what I want done, how I want them done, what direction, what is important, what are those things that they ought to take note of, and then what do they need to do afterwards to make sure that the courts will respect what it is that they're saying. Because I think that's important. I've had people write stuff down, but they don't have it notarized. They don't have a witness. And like, this was the best I will, or this was the best I, you know, POA. And it doesn't quite work that way. So what should they do, you know, when they're starting this process to make it easier?
Everybody should make a list of what they want to be dispersed amongst their family members, number one. So that's real property. Literally anything. I mean, it could be down to a coin collection. My grandmother has a coin collection that is going to my uncle. So, you know, I think that everyone needs to, anything, any, you know, account that doesn't have a name beneficiary, what should go in your will is anything that you would like to be divided amongst your family as it pertains to personal property and real property, like a house or something like that. I also recommend a separate document, just a separate estate planning document where you write down the passwords to your account, how to pay your mortgage, you know, because the mortgage has to be paid while you're figuring out how to unload the property or, you know, deed over the property to whoever it's named in the will that it should go to. So all of that stuff needs to be kept up with while you're in probate, right? So I would even say in that estate planning document, have all types of any important account, the password, if there's not, again, if there's not a second name designated beneficiary on those accounts, the password and username to access those accounts in the case of your debt. The way you live your life, you know, how can someone pick up the baton and continue on your affair? So just think about everything that you do day to day and write down, you know, if you were to pass away, you know, someone should be able to take that document and literally handle your affairs as you would had you still been here. And that's how clear it should be. And as far as making sure that it stands up in court, you need two witnesses to a will. And I would recommend that anyone who stands to gain from the will should not be one of the witnesses.
That's right? A good nugget right there. That's a good nugget. Like, listen, because you don't want undue influence on a thing or what have you. Unless, like in my case, my two children are my ultimate beneficiaries. So they both are witnesses. They both stand to gain. So in that regard, I just have the perfect number of
individuals. Exactly. Exactly. See, I have two brothers. Right. So that would be a fight.
and these are the conversations that people don't want to have. And that's one of the reasons why I thought it was very important. Now, again, I am in a place now, and this is, I'm so appreciative that you thought it not robbery to join me. I'm in a place now where, you know, I am of age and I have my own business, and I was thinking about succession planning. And as much as I've tried to twist my children's arms, or tried to threaten them with bodily harm, tried to entice them with the benefits and the profits of my business, they ain't interested in what it is that I have. And when my last book was released, which is number 7, I'm like, I still get royalty checks from book number 1. This is an important conversation to have. We all talk about building a legacy, right? And we want it to be economic. We want it to be a faith-based legacy. We want it to be all of those things, but we don't know how to preserve it from generation to generation. You have helped us tremendously to not only expand our way of thinking, but also to consider, you know, trigger moments. So are there any final thoughts, words of wisdom, advice, or guidance? And I will reiterate something that you said earlier in the show that I'm going to use moving forward, henceforth, now, and forevermore. Anything you would like to share in the end?
Well, the one last point I wanted to make was put the will in a place where someone can find it, please. I know that a lot of, at least for in New Jersey, a lot of law firms no longer keep a copy of your will for you. So make sure you have two copies and put them in a place where someone can find it. And you can put in your estate plan and document the will is in the drawer, you know, in the closet or something like that. So that was the one point that I wanted to make to your last question. But it's just as far as parting words, I think I would reiterate just having the conversation with your family and with your loved ones as direct as possible. Death is a tough topic to discuss, but we are all going to die one day. And I think the easiest way to have the conversation is to just have the conversation.
Well, listen, I have admired your life growth thus far and still anticipate great things from you. In my closing, there are some things that Sabrina has stated that I think are very important. First things first, I will reiterate the point that she made, having your will in an easily accessible place. I, as a financial planner, oftentimes have had the privilege of keeping my clients' important documents because the first thing is processing death or disability or anything of that nature. The next question is, how do we manage it financially? All of my clients say, call Nicole. It's okay with me. I really, after 30 years of doing this, I find it to be a privilege that I can journey with people during the most difficult of times. But the one thing that Sabrina Williams has said that will resonate with me moving forward is the moment that you acquire an asset is the moment that you are to plan for where that asset goes. Now, I had to put my own spin on it, but you know what she said. The moment that you acquire something is the moment that you are to plan where it goes. That takes away all age barriers for you to think that you have to be my age above 50, or my grandmother's age, maybe in her 90s, or my mama's age might be in their 70s. It starts with an individual that has a desire to not be, broke in their lifetime. When they acquire an asset, they ought to plan for where it goes. I think that's a perfect way to end the show. If you desire to be a guest on Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole, because you want to do what? Create legacy, both in faith and in finances. We are here to have that conversation with you. As always, it's a pleasure and a privilege that you've connected with us today. And we'll see you on the next episode of Dare to Dream with yours truly. God bless. Talk to you soon.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Next Financial Group Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.